The Racing Pod.
Looking ahead to this year's Galway races? Then don't miss The Racing Pod live with Off the Ball. Join me, John Duggan and Johnny Ward, alongside special guests Joe Canning, Barry Geraghty and Paul Nolan, for an afternoon of racing insight, expert tips and plenty of crack. We'll be live from Mary Mullins Pub on Tuesday, July the 28th, previewing all the big action from Ballybrit with thanks to William Hill. Tickets are on sale now at offtheball.com/events. The Racing Pod live, July the 28th at Mary Mullins Pub. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Off the Ball.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tildenafil.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Welcome to Thursday's After Ball with your host Seamus Flanagan here in place of Owen Sheehan for one night and one night only. We've an unbelievable show coming up for you. Richie Hogan and John Keenan are going to join us in the next hour to chat all things All-Ireland Hurling Final, and we have Tim Vickery to look back on England's World Cup exit. I'm joined here in studio by Eve Conway to my right and the great Arthur O'D to my left. How are we all, men and women?
Thank you.
Flying. Eve, you're struggling.
I'm struggling.
You're struggling, Eve.
I'm having a rough day.
Tell us why, Eve.
Well, the half English side of me. Yeah, I was very conflicted yesterday. I don't know if you know this, Seamus, but I have Argentina in the work sweepstake. But of course, my loyalty is pretty split being half English myself. So I kind of went into yesterday thinking, I'll be happy no matter the outcome. But by the 82nd minute, that really wasn't the case.
No. Fighting everyone on Harry Kane has to stay on. You gotta keep him on. It's like, but he looks really tired, Eve. It's like, no, you gotta keep him on for penalties.
We have to keep him on the pitch. We have to, that's probably not that that's where they fell down, but I thought Jude and Harry staying on the pitch.
They looked tired.
They looked wrecked.
And I mean, the game had gone to penalties and suddenly if you had taken them off, Tuchel's criticism would have been of you can't be taking off your best kind of two attackers and you're guaranteed penalty takers before they reach the penalties. Yeah. But then, of course, that didn't happen.
No. Yeah, but my question on that is, they have so many penalty takers as well. Like, you look at Ivan Toney, penalty taker. You look at Madueke, penalty taker. Like, all these guys on the bench that would have potentially hit penalties. I get that you're taking off your number one penalty taker. Mm. But he was exhausted.
He was. It's a straight. But I know exactly your inch. The intuitive feeling is like you just think like Argentina don't take off Messi, whatever the situation is. Now I know he's different sort of operational system there, like in whatever way his energy reserves work. But I do get it. But at the same time, it was one of those where it's like I actually heard that someone was talking about it. Like it probably in real time watching it was like I'm sure he can't run onto anything. But then you're actually looking back, it's like well nobody was hitting those passes anyway. So it's like, it is hard to know if it's like, was actually him or it's just like, everyone was, they were shagged. Like, it was just whatever it was. Every time he got it back, just launch it up again. And it's just inviting it on yourself.
I mean, I saw a remarkable statistic from yesterday that for about a kind of 30-minute period in the second half, they only made two accurate passes, England. They were so lethargic.
It's bananas, yeah. But then you look at the flip side and you look at Argentina and you say, two games, both played 120 minutes of games in the games combined. And I understand England coming down out of Mexico, having to get up for that game, which was obviously psychologically huge for them to play at that altitude and then come back down. But I thought the baffling stat for me was that I didn't realise that the stadium that they played in last night was an aircon-filled stadium.
Yeah.
Mm. What is that like to play in?
I don't know. You'll have a better idea. I don't know. Like, it's... I guess it's probably as normal. I mean, do they complain of any difference in Wimbledon, like when the roof's closed? And
it depends really on who you speak to. I mean, it's probably the best comparison, actually, in terms of the way it changes the game. A player like Grigor Dimitrov playing at Wimbledon this year really didn't like when they'd interrupt the game to close the roof because the environment changed so much. But I suppose for this tournament in the USA, so many of the stadiums have been air conditioned, so you're probably used to it by the time you'd reach the semi-final stage. But it is so different compared to what they'd be used to playing to back in the Premier League.
Yeah, and even the game before that, them playing in Mexico and having that vicious heat they were playing in and that altitude to contend with. I suppose thinking of rugby kind of scenarios, it's probably the same. The Principality Stadium,
they can't close the roof.
They can close the roof that as well, can't they? But again, probably not the same humidity and obviously not having to have the stadium air-conned either.
It's a great question, actually. You don't know how... I presume they prep for all those things if so much... and it's funny, I know you were looking at it earlier, the like the Jordan Pickford water bottle.
Yeah.
Like clearly no expenses spared in terms of like nailing down into the smallest details. So you guess they're as ready as possible. That was incredible.
That was insane.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone hasn't seen it. Like, he must have left in the goal after him.
I'd assume he left it after, but yeah, for anyone that didn't see it, it was the full 11 plus subs, anyone that came on, and it was the detail that was in it.
Yeah.
Hole, dive left, feint left, go right. That's insane.
I like the one that was just feel on the day.
It's amazing, though, and the general gist I see is that from the way the Argentinian players were looking at it, they were kind of like, oh, yeah, no, fair play.
I know, yeah, well, you could see at one stage Enzo Fernandez, and he's pointing towards the sky and he's saying, yeah, thank God I didn't get to that stage.
God almighty.
But it obviously didn't go that way, but I was looking, you contrast that first half Argentina versus that second half Argentina. It seems like they're a team that actually thrives and plays better under that pressure of needing to get a goal, that the fans come into it. And you could see even yesterday when you were watching the game, the camera pans to the fans and there was just no sense of disbelief whatsoever. It was just sheer and utter, we're going to do this. Yeah. And obviously getting the game or drawing from that experience, I suppose, the last two games against Egypt and Switzerland. But at no point in time did it look like they were panicking whatsoever. It looked like they were nearly thriving in that scenario.
Is that something that you've experienced in your career where you're kind of, it's going down to the wire and you know you need to get this over the line? Does it make you sloppier, as maybe with the case with England? Or if you're chasing something like Argentina, you know you can go hell for leather.
It's actually different, because when you're in the lead, I remember thinking back to, we played, actually funny enough, it's coming up this weekend as well, Galway in the All-Ireland Final 2018. And I remember we were ahead by 5 or 6, and next thing Joe got a penalty, stitched it. And I think was it Brian Concannon got a goal as well? And I remember all of a sudden the 9-point lead was wiped, was down to 3, and they knocked over 2, and then there was a point in it and Joe got that free. And I remember when you're leading and you're coming down, all you want to, you just want the game over. Just want the game over. So when England scored and what was the 55th minute with Anthony Gordon, you're saying just let it be 70, 80. And they actually got to that stage. And then when you're looking at, you're in, I suppose, in a position where you're in Argentina's place where you're chasing the game, and you look two weeks ago of the Limerick versus Clare, and you're looking at the clock and all you want to do is give me another minute. So it's definitely a contrasting place to be. But personally, I would have always preferred to be in an England situation, because you can close that game out. But I just thought Tuca was mad the way that he set up the team in the second half.
He's been hammered.
Rightly so.
Like, it seems so, yeah. Like, and I see there are some contrasting opinions out there about maybe utter faults. But like, we were here yesterday even watching in the office, like, and even in real time, it was kind of like, oof, it's like, this is a bit of a risky kind of move. And all of a sudden, like, as you were saying, like, they were looking, they weren't Norway or Mexico in terms of, like, they had a very clear kind of idea and penetration and stuff. And you're like, even if, and to be fair, to hold it out, as your point, you made this point as well, if they hold out, he looks like a genius.
Absolutely.
So it's like, it's not nothing. But once it did happen, you're like, if they score one, England have like 6 defenders on the pitch here.
Yeah.
And it's like, not necessarily the most mobile, kind of easily sort of, Reece James wasn't still on there who could slip into midfield or whatever else. It's like, all of a sudden, someone, I saw a great tweet or something earlier as well about, like, I think within 8 minutes, Dan Byrne went to sort of, I suppose, shoring up the defence to be in England's kind of leading off the press. And you're like, how has this happened? It's like, which was just mad, him being the first line up there, and you're like, something's gone horribly wrong. So yeah, you're right. I think it's right. I think it's inevitable he gets hammered, but it is interesting, like, even some of that real hard, vociferous response is like, oh, sack him, this guy can't take us any further. You're like, Jesus, he's only in the job, I think,
January 2025.
Yeah.
And he's signed a contract until the end of the next Euros, so in 2028.
That's bananas.
And it's a home Euros as well, so I mean, they'll be desperate.
Yeah.
They'll have probably the whole way through, I'd say, in Wembley, more or less.
Yeah.
So, like, and we saw how that went before. Like, it's such an advantage that you'd be like, gotta get that right.
Mm.
Gotta get that right.
Especially for a home one. But let's kick off the news round this evening. Eve, where are we off the first?
Oh God, we're still with England. So the World Cup final will be contested between Spain and Argentina after Argentina produced a spirited comeback against England in yesterday's semi-final. This will be Argentina's second consecutive World Cup final and their third in the last 12 years. England were leading after an Anthony Gordon goal, but conceded two late goals to shatter their hopes of reaching a second ever World Cup final. Manager Thomas Tuchel has been heavily criticised in the English media today over his in-game management. And in his post-match press conference yesterday, Tuchel explained the thought process behind his defensive substitutions.
Argentina played with more risk, played with more rhythm, played with a feeling maybe that they have nothing to lose anymore, which freed them up and hold us back, because we obviously played suddenly with a feeling that we have a lot to lose. So we dropped immediately back into a deep block, which is also not a problem, but we could not. We struggled to stay active in that deep block, and we struggled to defend crosses in the deep block, and we struggled to get physical on the runners into the box. Argentina then made changes with four strikers, wide wingers, two strikers in the middle. So we tried to adapt to that in a back five, which is a wider structure, and to have a shorter distance to the players that took the crosses. But it was difficult for us. We could not find any duels. We could not find any ball possession anymore, couldn't get the momentum back at all. And they took advantage of that and won the game.
Just what baffles me out of that one is, you look at Argentina's two previous games, mm-hmm. and you look how oppositions set up against them when they were 1-2 nil up, and how the FA, how England, and how everyone involved in English football that was over at that World Cup didn't see that and say to themselves, right, if this plays out, this scenario plays out, here's how we're setting up. We are not dropping into that low block. We are not, like, you do, coming from a GA background, you do your prep in an opposition and you say to yourself, this is how they're setting up initially in the first half. If we nick one, here's how they're going to set up. If they nick one, here's how we're going to set up. And to have what seemed from a lack of foresight in terms of how to see out that game. But I just wonder, is that what it is? Is it lack of foresight? Is it lack of seeing how a game could potentially pan out and then allowing it getting away from you, making that misjudgment, ill-timed judgment?
It's really hard to know. You'll have a far greater appreciation. I'm always conscious when we're talking about these things that we'll know so little relative to the kind of people we're talking about. And you know, when you see something, you're like, well, that is odd. Mm. And it's not like you kind of always have to go, it's like, ah, they must be right. I just must not see it. But you kind of would, you'd think they definitely know. Like, they'll know what you're saying. They'll have seen it. They'll have done their work. They'll know what the right thing to do was. And then for some reason, they don't do it. Or they choose a different path and it kind of blows up. So I always wonder about these things. Like, it can't be a knowledge thing. Like, they can't not have known what the likely outcome would be if they did what they did. And even you talk about that thing, like, even in the Switzerland game, like, it took Switzerland going down to 10 men for Argentina to kind of get that thing. Like, Switzerland probably knew.
Yeah.
So then it becomes something else. Like, it becomes almost something, I don't know if it's emotional or if it's mental or if it's panic or whatever it is.
Yeah, and does that tie back to, okay, obviously everyone is lambasting Tuchel for how he set up, but was it a case, and I could not imagine that they could not have seen how that played out. So is it something that the players have to take ownership for, that they knew they were dropping into that low block once they go 1-0 up, that this was premeditated, that Dan Burn comes on, shores up the defence, and it was a lack of ability, it was a lack of belief in the players, it was a lack of understanding in that big game when I need to lock in and do my job, that it was nearly the players that had to take that ownership? Was that premeditated? Because I couldn't for the life of me understand if it was a management misunderstanding or seeing this and it won't happen in this game. I couldn't for the life of me see it playing out like that.
Well, I think psychologically, like, it was a cowardly move by Tuchel to say, we're going to go and we're going to defend.
Such a loaded word, isn't it?
But it is. I mean, and again, if it had worked out, it would have been a very clever and shrewd move. But going back and playing so, parking the bus effectively, playing five at the back, trying to just stay 1-0 ahead as opposed to trying to push for two. psychologically what that will do to the players is they're not now thinking about, we need to go and beat Argentina. We're now thinking, we need to let them not concede.
Mm.
And suddenly, when you're in that headspace, I imagine if you concede one, that's when your panic stations go in. Yeah. That's when you're thinking, well, we've already made all of our substitutions. And you have these lot who are absolutely chomping at the bit now. The stadium is alive and the crowd is so loud for an already heated fixture. And once that second goal went in, I mean, there was absolutely nothing England could do with the players on the pitch. Their attacking players who had been on for those full 90 minutes were now wrecked. And then, like, again, not to be disparaging of him, but Dan Byrne, his job isn't to score goals.
Yeah.
And bringing him on at that time, I think there was nothing England could have done.
But I think it's funny as well, what you were talking about there, Eve, in terms of like England being hell-bent on not letting them score. And then when they score, when you're in that scenario and you're the team in the ascendancy and you're holding a team at bay and you're doing everything in your power, like England were, playing super football. And then all the pressure comes on the other direction and it's about holding that pressure and maintaining that pressure and not letting them score. When they do score, you start to do things that you set yourself before that game and in all the prep you weren't going to do. You see Elliot Anderson, and for the first, for Enzo's goal, they're under so much pressure, but you see him leave Enzo and try to put kind of double team and team up. I think it was Nico O'Reilly on the left.
Messi, yeah.
And he just cuts the ball back to Enzo, and you're saying, if he just stuck on Enzo, that goal doesn't go in. But when you're in that headspace of, we're under so much pressure, let's just turn the ball over and get it up to the other side of the pitch. You do things and you come out of that shape that you're in, that they're probably so accustomed to and that they're so used to playing in, that you just come out of that shape and you start to do things that, and then when one goes in, all of a sudden, but that's what it is. Yeah. You know, when a team hasn't been in that place of being able to see out games like that, like not once did I think when Argentina scored, England are going to come back with a second.
Yeah, no. It was weird, in a weird way. Like, it felt very much, like, again, comfortable. I know you're not comfortable with it, but from the thing, it's like, well, that's over.
Yeah,
done.
I knew it. Like,
the inevitability, of it all. So I suppose sticking with football, how are Bowes and Derry getting on, Eve?
Yeah, so we have some European action, and it ended up 0-0 between Bohemians and St Joseph's in Gibraltar this evening in the Conference League first round qualifier. Bowes come into the game with a 2-0 advantage from the first leg at Daly Mount last week, with goals from Douglas, James Taylor and Connor Parsons, which means that Bowes will advance to the second qualifying round and face either Kosovan side Balkini or Welsh team Connors Quay. And then it's currently halftime between Derry City and Siska Sofia at the Brandywell. It's 0-0. And then Derry had lost the first leg in Bulgaria by 3-2. So they have been boosted by the return of Adam O'Reilly and Brandon Fleming, but they do need a big second half to try and salvage at least a point.
And sticking with the FAI fixtures then, Bowes are in action again this weekend?
They are. So we have the confirmed quarterfinals for the Club Orange Women's FAI Cup. And then we have them here. So on Saturday, August 1st, last year's runner-up, Bowes, host Shelburne at Daly Mount at 3 p.m. Defending champions Athlone Town are at home against Shamrock Rovers at 3:30. Then Sligo Rovers travel to Galway United for a 5 p.m. kickoff. And then on Sunday, August 2nd, Douglas Hall welcome Cork City at 2 p.m.
And I suppose sticking with women's soccer, Eve, the Irish women's national team, they play Kazakhstan where?
So Parky Cueve is set to host Ireland's Women's World Cup playoff against Kazakhstan in October. The home leg of the tie will be played in Cork if it's rubber stamped by the GAA's Central Council next month. And head coach Carla Ward, speaking to Willa Callahan on Off the Ball here last week, described how much her and her team love playing in Cork.
I love Cork, I do. You go down there and it's like, I was talking to someone actually on a plane the other day on the way home, actually from Dublin, and it's like a town, it's like a footballing cult actually. In fact, no, it wasn't on a plane, it was Kevin Doyle on RT the other night. And it's like a cult down there, it's great, you know, it's like a wholehearted, everyone wants to talk about football, everyone wants to talk about like Ireland and you play in, it's fascinating, it really is, and the, you know, it's so powerful when we go down there. And yeah, look, you know, the team's won their 100% free performances down there. I've been down there twice, and I love it down there, I really do, it's great.
Carla loves it down in Cork, so do I.
Yeah, you like them playing in Cork?
Oh, I love playing in Cork. I know I spoke with Colm earlier about my favourite stadiums. Cork's 100% up there. I loved it so much. It was I remember like we played 2018, I think, we played second second or third.
Yeah, but that's just Saturday evening.
Yes, that Saturday evening game. Yep. I loved it. There's not enough of them as well. The Saturday evening game.
Is it the atmosphere that you like?
It's the atmosphere, but the stadium is amazing as well. It's like it's a steeper stadium than anyone I've ever played in. Similar to Croke Park, but Croke Park you can kind of get lost in because Croke Park is Croke Park.
Yeah.
But I feel like with Páirc Uí Chaoimh, there's just something special about it. I remember playing in the old and it was the same, but there was more room behind the goals in the old Páirc Uí Chaoimh. We played our minor and 21s. But in the new Páirc Uí Chaoimh, yeah, I just have such good memories playing below there.
You had a hat-trick there once, didn't you?
Yeah. What was that, 20...
It was either 22 or 23, I think. But you lost, did you?
We lost, yeah.
That hit Park a lot. Yeah.
All my good games down at Park, we lost them all, or else we drew them. Because that 2018 game as well, I remember we drew that one. I think it was our third game on the bounce. And I remember just being shattered. We won a Munster final down there against Tipperary.
During COVID, wasn't it?
Yeah, that kind of... It was the
half COVID.
Half COVID.
I remember. Yeah, that's all coming back to me because you got a goal that day as well. When you were about 9 points down, weren't you? 9 or 10.
I remember
giving
Aaron a bit of a rattle. He went for a shot from the corner flag on the 21 and I was inside by myself. And who was in goals? It wasn't Reece Shelley. Was it Brian Hogan?
Probably,
He kind of deflected it out to me and managed to... Somehow scuffle it over the line.
So that's it, you and the Irish women's team. Love Cork.
Love Cork. The Open is obviously heading on at the moment. Eve, how are the Irish faring at the Open this evening?
Yeah, so a bit of a mixed bag. Tom McKibben, finished his round on 1 over par. Amateur qualifier David Howard finished his round on 4 over par. While poor Padraig Harrington, who won his third US Senior Open title this month, finished on 10 over par and is in last place. The latest on Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry, who are still playing. Rory McIlroy is 2 over after 13 holes and Shane Lowry is 1 over after 15. But speaking yesterday, Lowry said that Birkdale, which is where the Open is held this year, is a course designed to ensure that the best golfer wins.
I don't remember it being this good. So one hell of a golf course. Growing up watching Opens, this is how I imagined them, or this is how I would have, seen them in my head, when you come play one. So this is what it's going to play. It's going to play like a proper Open this week. And I think the best golfer will win, which is what you want. There's no trickery to it. There's no nothing to it other than you need to hit good golf shots and hold a few putts.
It's going to be a brilliant weekend of sport there with that. The Ireland team are obviously facing New Zealand this weekend. What are your thoughts on the Nations Championship? Are we fans? Are we not fans?
I had a podcast on this today for Word on the Street, just for that, a shout out. I think it's, I suppose, no bad thing. It's kind of like the Nations League in football, where you're kind of making fixtures that would happen anyway now mean a bit more. You get a trophy at the end, so...
I'd be lying if I said I had a vested interest one way or another. But I think it's unfortunate, because it's been buried, the time of year it started. It's like, it couldn't have been worse with the World Cup and hurling and football. It's not like you're a traditionalist. I don't really care too much, but I like, because it seems like the test series are kind of dead. I do like something like that. Like, I do, because there's even in Jura, you'll know from Jura, we'll have always things like the Munster Championship, Leinster Championship. It's like, and you could bin them off, and you could definitely have a better structure to the hurling championship that'd be probably in short better games, whatever else. But you're like, yeah, but what are we here for, And I just, it was funny because you say about Word on the Street, and Susanna explained this to us. I didn't realise it more or less came down to the northern versus the southern hemisphere. I mean, that is slightly kind of really stretching the bounds of kind of, put me in a lead team Europe, but I can't.
Because there'd be three fixtures for each country in the summer and then in the autumn, which would traditionally be the autumn series, there's going to be another three fixtures and then a final at the end to determine... between the best northern hemisphere and the best southern hemisphere.
But then it finishes off with first playing first, second playing second, third playing third.
Something like that, yeah.
It's bananas. It is, to your point, Arthur, it's getting... I think if there wasn't so much sport happening, I think there'd be an awful lot more onus on it.
Oh, yeah,
but it's just getting... As you said, it's getting buried because there's just so much...
That you're throwing Ireland, New Zealand into a sporting weekend and it's not like one or two... And the most important stuff going on is wild. And but I don't know. I guess you kind of, with these things, no more than what we're talking about with Tuchel, I guess World Rugby or whoever have kind of done the numbers and kind of go there's probably more money in this for us, or it makes more sense. Grand. But I do think, again, from slightly outside point of view, stuff like Ireland winning this series in New Zealand or whatever, like, was a big, massive thing. And like, if that's gone now as a concept, I suppose fortunate they did it when they did. You still had a chance. Like, yeah. But it is, yeah, I don't know. Everything changes, I guess. <It's> like,
it does. It doesn't. There's team news on that, Eve, is there?
Yeah, so Andy Farrell has made 9 changes to his starting 15 for this weekend's Nations Championship game against New Zealand. So I'll run through it now. It's Keenan, Balakoon, Ringrose, McCluskey, O'Brien, Prendergast, Gibson Park, O'Toole, Sheehan, Furlong, McCarthy, Ryan, Byrne, Van der Fleer and Conan. And last week's debutant Sean Jansen, who scored a try in the win against Japan, has been named on the bench. And, I mean, we have some audio here from Andy Farrell, who believes that Sean Jansen has earned his place in the squad.
Yeah, I obviously said after the game that he's a fantastic example of how to nail your debut, and basically he's just being himself. He is, and he doesn't let the game or the thought of a first cap or anything like that get in the way of producing what he knows he's all about, and you just know he's going to be able to do that again on Saturday. It shows his character, doesn't it? Of how he's gone about his business, backing himself to go overseas and first at Leicester and then on to Connacht, and he's been unbelievably consistent, and not just consistent, but some top performances certainly for Connacht this year, and he's back there up at test level. So I don't think he'll be overawed by what's in front of him at all. He'll just be himself.
And then last but not least on our news round for the day that's in it, we have some hurling news. And the Offaly under 20 hurlers need a new manager as Leo O'Connor has stepped down after 4 seasons at the helm. The former Limerick hurler guided the faithful to All-Ireland glory in 2024 and then back-to-back Leinster titles that same year. He also spent time as the manager of the Offaly minor hurlers and won the Leinster title in 2022. In a statement yesterday, Offaly GAA thanked O'Connor for his outstanding commitment, dedication and leadership during his tenure.
Eve, thank you for your outstanding dedication, commitment, and leadership to the news around today. Arthur, you're going to be sticking around with us when we talk to John Keenan after the ads, but first, time for the cash machine.
News Talk Summer Cash Machine.
The cash machine has been reloaded and there's going to be another guaranteed winner. The number you need to know is €250,000. That's €250,000. There are 2 ways you can enter. You can visit newstalk.com/cash machine, where you can enter online, or text play to 57557. That's 57557. Get your entry in by 3 p.m. on Friday, July 17th. Then across the Go Loud network of stations, someone will get that call. If your phone rings, answer it within 5 rings. Give us the exact amount in euro and cent and you will win the cash. So remember that amount. It's €250,000. That's €250,000. Over 18s only, text costs €2.50 plus your standard message rate to play. You are playing across the Go Loud network of stations and terms and conditions are on newstalk.com.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 1 50mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The Racing Pod.
Looking ahead to this year's Galway races? Then don't miss The Racing Pod live with Off the Ball. Join me, John Duggan and Johnny Ward, alongside special guests Joe Canning, Barry Geraghty and Paul Nolan for an afternoon of racing insight, expert tips and plenty of crack. We'll be live from Mary Mullins Pub on Tuesday, July the 28th, previewing all the big action from Ballybrit with thanks to William Hill. Tickets are on sale now at offtheball.com/events. The Racing Pod live, July the 28th at Mary Mullins Pub. 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.
Off the Ball.